That's recording in progress. Very good. All right. If I am, if my, I, if my Hollywood Square is larger than everybody else's, then you need to go to gallery view. So that's my my observation. From the day we went to Zoom, I don't know how many people here remember Hollywood Squares, but every time I do a session on Zoom, I am reminded of that world and my childhood. So that's my observation for the day. Okay. And we're going to I'm gonna temporarily, just because a little bit of a scratch background noise, I think it's probably from my end, I'm gonna put everybody on a temporary mute, but feel free to unmute yourself. And I will remind you something which I've shared with you in the past, that if you're on a computer, it doesn't work on an iPad, but if you're on a computer, the best and easiest way to quickly unmute yourself is to use the space bar. Because if you press the space bar and hold it, it acts like a microphone button. And you can talk, and then you can let go, and then you can. All right. So that's the you can try that. All right. Here I am, computer geeking away. All right. That's my other identity. Kitty, how are you doing? Good? All right. Yeah, she's good. All right. We are jumping into, this is where we're up now. This is where we're up to. We are up to Perek Yud Zayin of Shmuel Bet, chapter 17. And Shmuel, this literally picks us up in the middle of a story. So because we've had, I don't know, we last met in this class, in this context last year sometime, probably back in June. May or June, which means that we're at least 4 or 5 months from then. So for the sake of everybody, we're kind of do a quick bird's eye review of everything that we have done so far in this context of the story. So we picked up, this is the rebellion of Shalom against David. And it really starts in the aftermath of the story of Dov and Bathsheba, which was actually our curriculum 2 years ago. So if I go back to Perek Yud Daled, really, well, Yud Gimel, let's say chapter 13 was the story of Amnon and Tamar. That's kind of a separate crisis in David's household that starts after the rebellion of after the events of David and Bathsheba. But the end of that story is when Avshalom takes into his own hands an attempt to a sort of a vengeance against Amnon for his crime against his sister, and therefore kills Amnon, forcing him to run into exile. So the rebellion hasn't started yet, but Avshalom is now run into exile. That's the end of this chapter because of his vengeance against Amnon, and really taking over the sense of the leadership of the household, because David, in the aftermath of Bathsheba, David is sort of kind of hands tied. He can't really function as the leader, and certainly not in the judicial capacity. Whoops, wrong direction. That led us to chapter 14, where David is pining for Avshalom. Yoav is his general. He knows that he is pining for Avshalom, even though Avshalom has done this terrible thing. And he invites Avshalom. And he invites, there's a whole story with the Isha, with the Isha Tkuit. I'm going to skip that for now. And then at the end of this parak, he Yoav convinces convinces David to invite Avshalom back to the palace. David, on the other hand, is no fool, and he knows that Avshalom is planning a kind of a revolt against his leadership, and so he brings him back to Yerushalayim, but then sends him under house arrest, essentially refusing to see him in the palace. Yisov el beito ufanai lo yir'eh. Goes, but let him go back to his house, but he shall not see my face. Way to contain Avshalom who really is guilty of murder and treason, but nonetheless is about to commit an even greater offense by stoking an entire rebellion against David. David knows this, and so he tries to contain Avshalom. End of this chapter, Avshalom manages to pull the heartstrings again, and Yoav convinces David to have some sort of reconciliation with Avshalom, which is how the parak ends. Avshalom comes to the king, he bows to him, and he kisses him, but Yishakam Elach Avshalom, the king kisses Avshalom, and from David's perspective, he's kind of made a peace with Avshalom. Unfortunately, from Avshalom's perspective, that's all he's been waiting for. And so that brings us to chapter 15, which is the beginning of Avshalom's rebellion. Avshalom gathers together chariots, horses, 50 men, and he starts his rebellion. It starts by standing in front of the judiciary and the court and telling everybody, if you want true justice, you'll have to come to me, because David is incapable of leading of providing justice. And he kind of pulls the hearts of the people towards him. And then the end of this perek, Avshalom begins the actual rebellion. He goes down to Hebron, and there he starts to gather together all of his people. And Vayishlach Avshalom menaglim b'chol shiftei Yisrael lemor, kishamachem et kol ha-shofar. When you hear the sound of the shofar, then you'll know that I have begun, and you will say, Malach Avshalom b'chevron. Avshalom has declared himself king over in Hebron. What we had initially suggested, and I think it's an important piece of the puzzle, is that Avshalom really is not looking to start an all-out treasonous revolt against David, but rather declare himself more as a kind of a heir to the throne, a crown prince. David has not yet chosen a successor to the throne. And we had a whole discussion about when Shlomo is born. According to what we had suggested, Shlomo is not even born yet. It'll be born later. And so the outstanding question is who is going to be the next monarch. So that might be what Avshalom here is referring to. The rebellion isn't that he's declared himself king over David, but rather that he's declared himself the successor to the throne, Malach Avshalom b'Chevron. And Chevron, of course, is where David started. And a kind of a, I'm next in line. That's a theory. The text seems to say it's an all-out rebellion, but it is but it works, especially given what happens next. Avshalom takes 250 people, and they begin to plan this revolt. Vayishlach Avshalom et Achitofel Hagiloni. This is where our story is going to pick up today. This is very important. Avshalom brings into his inner council Achitofel Hagiloni. Achitofel was, as we'll see, chief advisor to David. And for Avshalom's purposes, his revolt begins when he's able to bring Achitofel into his revolt. And the reason it's so easy for him to do so is, at least according to the way we read the text in Divayamim and the story in the Medrash, Achitofel is Batsheva's grandfather. So there's a family connection and a great deal of angst on Achitofel's side, anger at David, and so it's not hard to see why Achitofel would change sides. And so he is with the conspiracy, but he had Kesher amidst the conspiracy was strong, and the people were with Avshalom. David heard that Avshalom had begun this revolt, and he does an astounding thing, which essentially is the centerpiece of the story, which is David is in Yerushalayim. David absolutely refuses to fight Avshalom in a battle. And so he tells all of his servants, we're going to pick ourselves up and we're going to leave Yerushalayim. We are going to abandon Yerushalayim and leave it for Avshalom. because Penya Meherbi Hisigana Vidya Khalinu Atara, lest he overtake us and bring evil upon us, he will not fight with Avshalom. And so his servants agree, and they begin the exile from Yerushalayim, David and his kingdom, kind of an exodus from Yerushalayim to leave Yerushalayim. He has 600 of his soldiers with him, and they leave on foot, and he has their families, and the generals, Kreti and Pleti, and they begin the exodus from Yerushalayim. The rest of this perek, and the next perek, is a chronicle of what happens to David as he leaves Yerushalayim. And at the same time, we now have the picture of Avshalom marching from Hebron to Yerushalayim. So there's two scenes going on in the text. And as Tanakh does, right, Tanakh doesn't have the language of changing scenes in a movie like we have today. And so we simply finish one story and then jump back to the next. So he's greeted on his way out by a number of individuals. One of them is Ittai HaGiti. Ittai HaGiti is the group of Givonim who joined David and expressed their loyalty to David. David says to him, Kinachui ata, you are a foreigner. I don't want your, you are going to be a burden to us. You don't need to express your loyalty to us from the city of Gat. You can go back. And how the world has turned upside down, if you think about the fact that Gat is in the area of the Plishtim that lived in the area around Gaza. Today, it's a whole different world, but we're not going to get into today's politics. Yomer HaMelech El Ittai HaGiti, he says to him, you go back, I don't need your support, you'll just be a burden to me. He refuses. Ittai says to him, "You, we are loyal to you. Wherever you go, we go. Wherever you go, for life or death, there we, your loyal servants, will be." And so that joining David's group is now the group of Ittai and all of the 600 people from and their families from Gat. And we have this really powerful picture of V'chol ha'aretz bochim kol gadol v'chol ha'am ovrim v'yemelech ovir b'nachal kidron v'chol ha'am ovrim al pnei ha'derech at midbar. We have David literally walking out of Yerushalayim, heading south through the into the midbar, heading down towards the area of Midbar Yehudah, and the people watching this exodus from Yerushalayim, and they're crying because there is the end, really, from the perspective of the people, the end of the kingdom of David. Vine gam tzadok, gam alevim, he has the Kohanim who are with him as well, and he turns to the Kohanim, and by acknowledging that the Kohanim stay with the Aron, they were carrying the Aron with them as David was leaving, David makes an extraordinary decision, which is Hashem et Aron Elokim Ha'ir. The Ark stays in Yerushalayim. And we spent a lot of time talking about the fact that in that decision of sending the Ark with the Kohanim back to Yerushalayim, David essentially did what is in the world of biblical history unimaginable, unthinkable, but he does it anyway, and it has created the status of Yerushalayim as the city of the temple, the city of the Ark, of Har HaBayit and the Mikdash. In other words, everything that David had dreamt about, he sets Yerushalayim in place and says the Ark belongs in Jerusalem, even if I, as the king, leave. And that changes the status of Yerushalayim forever. And then he makes this observation that this is all happening to him because of God's punishment to him for the story of Bathsheba. And so he says, if God chooses, I will return and I will see his habitation, his home. If not, I accept. If God says, I do not desire you, then I accept that decree. When we talked about this the first time, we looked at, if anybody's interested in going back, the shiurim are recorded and posted on the show website. These really are probably the two most dramatic, powerful psukim articulated by David HaMelech. The designation as that the city of God, the city of the Ark, is more important than he is, and the notion that he will accept whatever decree God has for him. In the meantime, at the same time, he turns to Tzadok and Eviatar, and he says to them, go back with the ark. But as you go back with the ark, know that you are strategically in a good place. You are in a position where if, for whatever reason, I need communication, I need information from what's going on when Avshalom reaches Yerushalayim, you will be there and your sons can carry messages to me. And so that's where they go back. Pasuk Lamed Aleph will connect to our story today, so we're going to start there. V'David yigid lemor, Achitofel b'kushrim. David was told that Achitofel is amongst the conspirators, and that bothers him. With Avshalom, that concerns David. Concerns him, number one, because Achitofel is very powerful. Achitofel is a general in the army. Achitofel is his chief advisor. Achitofel will eventually serve in Avshalom's army, the same role that Yoav serves in David's army, right? He's a very powerful individual, and his counsel is considered very wise. We'll see that in a moment. And so David, when he hears that Achitofel has changed sides to join Avshalom's rebellion, Vayomer David, Sakelna et Atzat Achitofel Hashem. And he offers a tefillah. It's the first time we see David in this context engaged in direct prayer. And he says to God, spoil the counsel of Achitofel. That's his tefillah. Because if the counsel of Achitofel can undo him, Achitofel knows David better than David knows himself. And so his plea to God is, I'm okay if Achitofel doesn't join the fight. If Achitofel joins the fight, I'm in trouble. Please spoil the counsel of Achitofel. The word sakel is an interesting word. It's translated here as foolishness. I think that comes from the notion of switching around the letters of ksil and sakel. So the very often in Hebrew, letters get interspersed, get exchanged. Like keves, kesev, salma, simla, sakel, and ksil, not uncommon. In the meantime, immediately after this prayer, Vahi David ba ad harosh, David came to the pass when he would come to the ascent, and vihine likvato chushai ha'aki. And who does he see? Chushai ha'aki. Now, we don't know who Chushai ha'aki is yet, because he's mentioned here for the first time. Turns out that he is David's personal friend. He is called in the story Rea David, friend of David. So the moment he finishes this prayer to God, that God should spoil the counsel of Achitofel, who should he meet but Chushai, his dear friend, who also served as a kind of counselor to David, but not in an official capacity, more as a personal counsel. And he comes to him with clothes torn and the ashes on his head. And David says to him, "Imavarti iti v'italai l'masa. If you come with me, Chushai, it will be like a burden. I have to look after another family and another entourage. Whereas, and this is David's plan, im ha'ir tashuv, if you go back to Yerushalayim, and you say to Avshalom, im atala Avshalom, avdecha ani amelecheya, I will be a servant to the king, meaning to Avshalom, eved avicha, v'ani me'az v'adat, I have always been a servant of your father, meaning David, and now I will be your servant, v'ani avdecha. Then says David to Avshalom, hefartali et atzat Achitofel, you will be in a position to defeat the counsel of Achitofel. You are the perfect person to send to Yerushalayim to serve as a counsel to Avshalom that can balance and offset and perhaps even defeat the counsel of Achitofel. And so you have this moment where he prays for some kind of address to the issue of Achitofel, and poof, it appears to him the first person he encounters is none other than his other deep personal advisor, and he says, oh, you go back to Yerushalayim, you be my spy. And he tells him that the two Kohanim are there and his sons are able to join in the communication back and forth, so you have a way of communicating with me. And so Chushai, Rea David, Chushai, David's friend, counsel friend, comes to the city before Avshalom does. And so he's there when Avshalom arrives. Avshalom Yavo Yerushalayim. And Avshalom comes to Yerushalayim. And here is where we now, this is part of one story, and now Avshalom is arriving. So David is heading south, and heading east, actually, into the Arava. And Avshalom is arriving from the south, from Hebron to Yerushalayim. Which brings us to Perek Tetzayin. Perek Tetzayin, I'm just going to run through quickly because it's really a separate story. Two kind of, it's a chapter that balances, we've studied it at the end of last year as well. It's a chapter that balances David's warm embrace by those who he met as he was leaving Yerushalayim, Chushai Haraki, Itai Agiti, and the Kohanim, etc. To all of that warmth, there's another side to the equation. David, like any leader, has his enemies. And so he encounters a servant by the name of Ziba, who was part of the house of Shaul, and who was in charge of Mephibosheth, and Mephibosheth, who was the son, the grandson of Shaul, son of Yonatan, another story that we talked about. And we'll come back to that. We'll study it much later again, because it'll come up in a later chapter. So for now, I'm just going to remind us that it's there. David hears from Ziba kind of an accusation against Mephibosheth, that Mephibosheth has changed sides, and Mephibosheth is kind of waiting in the palace. And Mephibosheth really had no intention of changing sides, but Mephibosheth was a cripple. He could not join the fight. And so David buys the accusation of the Lashon Hara against Mephibosheth. Unfortunately, and it'll come back to haunt him later in life. We'll leave that story for now. The next person who he meets is Shimi ben Gera from the house of Shaul. And so all of the Binyamin, all the people of significance in the house of Shaul, utilizing this crisis of David and his fight with the son of Shalom to kind of bring out all of their old claims against David, in this case against the fact that David won the war, so to speak, against Shaul. And so he sees Shimon ben Gera, and Shimon ben Gera is throwing stones at him, literally throwing stones at him, and calling him a murderer. Shiva lech Hashem, it's called Dmei Beit Shaul Hashem alach tachtav. God has returned upon you the blood of the house of Shaul, who you killed, who you slain, and whose reign you took. And there's a Ish Damimata, you a man of blood. And whereas David's nephews Avishai and Yoav, they want to kill him for this treasonous words, David says, what do you have to defend me for? This is God's punishment to me for all that I have done. I accept it, and I will let him have his say. So that is what continues. Vayelech David v'anashav badarech. David and his people are walking along the way. V'shimi yolech b'tzela l'umato. And Shimi is standing there on the mountaintop, cursing him, throwing stones at him, throwing mud at him, and David just is quiet. Pasuk Yudalid, v'yavo amalech b'chol ha'am asher ito ayefim v'yinafesha. The king and all of the people there arrived in his destination, Midbar Yehuda, tired, weary, ayefim, and there they rested and v'yinafesh and tried to refresh themselves as David, his entourage, his people, those who families from Yerushalayim, families from Gath, his exile from the palace. David is now in Midbar Yehuda. Scene shifts. Remember, we said at the end of chapter 15 that Avshalom arrived in Yerushalayim. Scene shifts to Avshalom in Yerushalayim. The Avshalom b'chol ha'am ish Yisrael ba'al Yerushalayim achitof lito. Avshalom finally comes to Yerushalayim with all of the people who had joined his conspiracy and his rebellion, and Achitofel with him. What does he find when he gets to Yerushalayim? David is gone. Now, remember, this is pre-internet and pre-telephones and pre-communication and pre-faxes and pre-newspapers. So nobody, it's not clear that Avshalom knew that David was leaving Yerushalayim. Avshalom marched on Yerushalayim with the full intent of declaring himself either king or crown prince, heir apparent, whatever you want to call it, and he finds that David is gone. And now he really is the king. And when he arrives there, the first person he meets, he arrives there with Achitophel, the first person he meets is our friend Hushai Ha'arki. We're going to keep coming back to him because he is the subject of our next chapter. Vayikra Sherba, Avshalom comes to Yerushalayim, and he sees Hushai Ha'arki, Re'a David, friend of David. And he comes over to Avshalom, and he says, Yomach Hushai al Avshalom. Hushai says to Avshalom, Yechi HaMelech, Yechi HaMelech. Long live the king. Which is a way of saying, I accept your reign. I accept you as the king. Remember, this is probably the most dangerous double agent concern that Avshalom encounters. This is David's closest confidant. Achitophel has every good reason to want to join Avshalom's rebellion. Not only that, Avshalom sought after Achitophel. Avshalom invited Achitophel. And probably because of the story of Bathsheba. Whereas Hushai is David's personal friend. So Avshalom says to Hushai, Zechas techat re'echa, this is how you repay your kindness to your friend? Why didn't you go with your friend? Lama lo alachta re'echa? Why didn't you go with David? Yomer Hushai al Avshalom, so Hushai says, lo, no. Ki asher bachar Hashem ve'am hazeh v'chol ish Yisrael lo eye v'ito eshev. Listen. To be king, you need a number of elements to all agree. You have to be chosen by God. You have to have the agreement of the Navi. You have to have the agreement of the people, consent of the people. You have to have consent of the military, of the army. Ish Yisrael is the army. They all have to agree. And right now, whoever that group comes together and agrees as the king of Israel, I will serve them. And that it would be, in this case, you, Vito Hashem. Not only that, Lemian Yoved, I'm not rebelling against David. Who am I serving? Who am I? When I declare my loyalty to you, who am I declaring loyalty to? I'm declaring loyalty to a son. In other words, you, Avshalom, you're not, it's not a rebellion against the lineage of the house of David. You are the house of David. You are David's son. Why shouldn't you reign? Just because you have a couple of other brothers that might be in contention, really, they're half-brothers, really, they're not part of the story. Shlomo may not even have been born yet. Bathsheba certainly not appropriate in their eyes. Not right. Not, we'll talk about David's perspective, but in the eyes of the people, Bathsheba's not appropriate to birth the reign, the next king, and therefore, I'm serving his son. I was loyal to your father, I'll be loyal to you. Makes perfect sense. So at that point in time, that's the end of this conversation, and it would seem that Avshalom buys the story and allows Hushai a position. To use a modern terminology, a position in his cabinet. And then he says, V'yomer Avshalom al Achitophel, habu lechem etza manasa. Turns to Avshalom and he says, turns to Achitophel and he says, Achitophel, give counsel. What should we do? What's our next step? And here I want to remind everyone of the last shiur or two that we had before the break. This is all still part of that big review. But the last shiur or two that we had, we talked about this story. Okay, it's a couple of psukim. It's a very graphic and very kind of demeaning story, but nonetheless, Avshalom turns to Achitophel and he says, "What should I do? Give counsel." And Achitophel says to him, as was the practice in biblical times, if the king wants to solidify his claim to the throne, he should take the concubines of the previous reigning monarch and claim them for himself. Just not uncommon. We saw in the earliest reference in Tanakh to that event, that kind of event, is the story of Reuven, who takes Bilhah, his father's Pilegesh, right? As a kind of a claim to the leadership of Israel, which is an event that starts the whole conflict over who was going to lead the people of the tribes of Israel after Yaakov. And of course, that led to the story of Yosef. Park that aside, here, Achitophel makes the suggestion, take your father's concubines, whom he left here in the palace, and all of Israel will hear that you took your father's concubines. And in that way, you have shamed your father, and you have taken this role as the king. And that will strengthen your hand. Now, to us, that suggestion sounds somewhat absurd, but in the biblical arena, that's a language that they all understood. And so, Avshalom takes his tent, he pitches it on the top of the rooftop, and there he takes his father's concubines, and he invites them one by one in public to into the tent that he has established on the rooftop. You might say, why on earth would Avshalom listen to such an absurdity? Because atzat Achitophel l'shi'atz bayamim ma'em kashe yishal ish b'dvar elokim. The counsel of Achitophel in those days was like a person who inquired of God. It was like asking the Kohen for a response from the Urim v'Tumim from the Ark, or asking the Navi. Achitophel was very respected. Came kol atzat Achitophel gam leDavid v'gam leAvshalom. That's how they saw, revered Achitophel's counsel, both to David and to Avshalom. And so Achitophel makes the suggestion. That's exactly what Avshalom does. The last question we asked, which is going to be the segue into today's shiur, is where is Hushai? If the purpose of Hushai was to spoil the counsel of Achitophel, here Achitophel makes what seems to be an absurd suggestion, and Hushai is nowhere to be seen. We just finished talking about how he kind of convinces Avshalom of his loyalty, and now he's a spy within the palace. And here Achitophel offers his counsel to Avshalom, counsel which is revered like the Dvar Elokim. The whole purpose of Hushai is hasakelni et atzat Achitophel, fairly et atzat Achitophel, to spoil the plans of Achitophel. And here Hushai is nowhere to be seen. So there are two possible answers to this question. One is that he's talking to Achitophel. Avshalom doesn't engage this conversation with Hushai. On the other hand, and this is a kind of a nuance suggestion, if you look at Pasuk Chaf, Vayomer Avshalom al Achitophel, Havu lachem etza. The word Havu means give, but is in the plural. If you were talking to one person, you would say have. What is havu? Havu means give, but in the plural. So who's he talking to? So it could be that it's like some of the Mefarshim say, it's like the royal we, but in reverse. It's the royal you. Okay, he's talking to his advisors, okay? And he kind of uses a metaphor or kind of a more poetic, right? What should we do? Okay, like, And Avshalom and Achitophel's response is accordingly. On the other hand, it could very well be that he's talking in Pasuk Yotet, he's talking to Hushai. This whole conversation is with Hushai. Avshalom and Achitophel arrive in the palace. Hushai is there. He engages Hushai in a conversation and he says, why are you here? And Hushai responds. And then Avshalom turns to Achitophel and says, Havu lachem etza, meaning you both. Okay, so now I have both of you here. Here, Hushai is standing there, and now Achitophel. So he turns to you both. Fine, if you both want to be here, so be it. I have two advisors now. Here's my question. What should we do? And the question, what should we do, is also important to recognize, because what should we do? Avshalom planned a rebellion. What should we do? What kind of a question is that? And the thought is that David pulled a fast one on Avshalom. Avshalom was planning to march in Yerushalayim and claim himself the heir to the throne. as we plan to march into the palace, storm the gates of the palace, open up the front doors and say, okay, David, we've had enough of this. I'm going to be the next king after you. And he finds the throne room empty. And the guards missing. And suddenly he finds himself not the heir to the throne, but the throne. Doesn't know what to do with it, right? He's never been groomed to be the heir to the throne. He wouldn't know the first thing about what it means to be king. And so in that moment of surprise, he turns to now his two chief advisors, both of whom had a role with David, both of whom have counseled the king of in the past, and says to them, okay, so what do I do? And Achitofel comes up with the most absurd suggestion. Which is the first thing you're going to do is you're going to solidify your role in the palace by claiming the wives of David. And where is Hushai in this conversation? Nowhere. Silent. Nowhere to be seen or heard. And so what I suspect, and this will become clearer in the next chapter as well, is that Hushai is very strategically picking his battles. If Hushai at this moment were to say to Avshalom, you know what, Achitophel's counsel, nah, that's ridiculous. You're going to embarrass David. You're going to embarrass your father. You're going to take your father's concubines. That would be absurd. Don't do that. That's a terrible idea. Let's do something else. I don't know. Let's play chess. Whatever he would say at this point would be a dead giveaway that he is he's there just to spy on him. Achitophel's suggestion has a certain compelling logic in the world of biblical morality, meaning in the world of the morality of kings and the behavior of kings. He even has a somewhat of a halachic status too. So Hushai has no choice. If Hushai were to oppose Achitophel here, he'd give away his hand. And so Hushai very conspicuously stays silent, moves into the background. Achitophel makes a suggestion. Avshalom may have even turned to Hushai and said, you agree? And Hushai may have said, yes, we don't know. That's not on the text. But I suspect Hushai is simply biding his time. This is not the place to challenge Achitophel because he would lose and he would give away his hand. He needs to buy the loyalty, acquire that loyalty that he's been waiting for. Because the moment will come when David will need, where Avshalom will need Hushai's counsel again, and that's when he will be able to disrupt the plans of Achitophel. Okay, that is our quick review of the last four chapters, more or less review of the curriculum from last year. I won't remind you of the story of the rabbi giving our lecture, and somebody asked him, Rabbi, can you summarize that for me in 5 minutes? And he said, sure. And the response was only, why didn't you? So this took us a more or less a year to go through. We've done it now in 40 minutes, but that's the bird's eye view of the world of the rebellion of Avshalom. Before I turn the page, metaphorically, are there any questions? Then a quick review. So either it was so quick that I kind of ran through it, or we're good. We're good? We're turning the page. Here it comes. You ready? Perek Yedzayin. That's where we're up to. Okay. Vayomer Achitophel al Avshalom. Achitophel said to Avshalom the following. Evcharana 12,000 ish. I will go now and I will choose 12,000 men. Viakuma. And I will go and chase after David tonight. I will find him. I will come to him. Uyagea, he's tired. Urafeyadaim, and he's weak. Vacharadati oto, I will make him afraid. Is that a question, or is that I will come to him. He's weak. I will make him afraid. I will frighten him. And all the people who are with him, they'll flee. They'll run away. And I will smite the king by himself. I'm not going to harm the people with him, but I will take out the king. And in that way, I will bring the people back to you. Kishuva kol, they'll all return. Aisha sher tava vakesh, except for the man whom you seek, meaning David, kol am yeshalom. The people will be in peace. In other words, if you send me on this mission, if you authorize this mission, I will take out David. The rest of the people will remain unharmed. I will bring them back to you whole. It's a very dangerous mission. He's going to go and attack Halila in the middle of the night with 12,000 men. He thinks he can get him. He thinks he can catch up to him. David is tired. David is weak. And I'll frighten him, a surprise attack. Naskola Amasherito, the people will run. Or David will be left alone. They don't have the stomach for it. David will fight. I will take out David and the king, and I will bring everybody else back. That's Achitophel's plan. It's a good plan. Right? It's a good plan. Why is it a good plan? Sounds to me like a very good plan. Why is it a good plan? Well, it has the advantage of being a surprise attack. It's a we'll break it down in a few minutes. Let's first read the story. Vayishar Adavar b'nei Avshalom. Avshalom liked it. Sounds like a very reasonable plan. Sounds like a course of action. Remember, Avshalom has never done this before. So he has he's relying on his counselors. Achitophel has given him a military plan for the attack of David and his forces and take out David and bring the forces back. Uvene kol zignei Israel. And the elders of Israel, they also like this. When I gave the shiur this morning, I added one kind of caveat, which is a somewhat of a, not so much a warning, but so much of an observation. We happen to have been up to this point in the story. This is, right? So there are pieces of the story that are that resonate today in the moment differently. And I want to separate that because that would take us into a very different world. So we have to kind of, a little bit of cognitive dissonance to. Ve'yishav ha'davar b'nei Avshalom b'nei kol zignei Yisrael. Avshalom liked the idea. The elders liked the idea. We're good. Except, ve'yomer Avshalom, k'ra na gam l'chushai ha'arki. Why don't we call him l'chushai ha'arki and hear what he has to say? Let's hear his suggestion. Does he agree with your plan? Does he not agree with your plan? Let's see what Chushai says. Chushai comes to him. This is Achitophel's words. This is what he said to me. Should we act on it? Should we do this? Am I or not? So speak. What do you have to say, my dear Chushai? Chushai says to Avshalom, Lo tova ha'itza asher ya'atz Achitophel b'pam hazot. This counsel Achitophel has given you this time, not good. Not a good plan. Vayomer Chushai said, now notice the reference to Vayomer Chushai twice. Once in Pasuk Zayin, and then again in Pasuk Chet. Why would the same speaker be speaking two pasukim apart, pasuk apart, and the text have to say that he's right, that Chushai said. There's nothing in between. You understand the question? Right. Chushai said to Avshalom, "This is not a good idea." Chushai said to Avshalom, "You know, right? Why add that sentence?" And so usually there's a paragraph break or there's a pause or a change of speaker or something. I suspect that Hushai made this statement, Achitophel's counsel is not good this time, and waited for a response. No response came, so he pushed on. You know your father. You know his men. They are mighty men. They are giborim. And they're embittered men. They are like a bear robbed of her cubs in the field. Don't want to start up with a bear robbed of her cubs in the field. Father is a man of war. He's not going to sleep with the people out in the field where you can just pounce on him in the middle of the night in a surprise attack and capture him. He's hiding in some pit or in some place. And if you just attack his forces, you will fail. And then you'll lose all the momentum. People will hear that there was a terrible slaughter amongst the people of Shechemai Avshalom, the people that followed Avshalom. And even the most valiant warrior, even if you're a warrior whose heart is like the heart of a lion, his heart will melt. Because everybody knows your father is a mighty man, he's a warrior, and his men with him are warriors. This plan is not going to work. Therefore, I have a better plan. I'll give you counsel. What's the better plan? Gather together all of the men of Israel, the army of Israel, from Dan in the north to Beersheba in the south. Like the sand of the sea, and you go into battle with them. Full on slaughter the entire army of Israel in one attack. We will come to you in wherever you will find that place. We will meet you there. We will establish a camp. We will attack like the dew upon the ground. There will be none left, not one. The email, Iriasef, and if he draws himself into a city to protect himself, and in a walled city, Israel will come upon that city with ropes. We will draw it into the valley. It won't even be a pebble. That's Hushai's plan. So before I read the next pasuk, I'm going to actually hide it for a second. So more or less, I have... Let's stop sharing for a second. Okay. I'm going to take the text out of the equation for a second. I have two plans. Achitofel's plan, Hushai's plan. Both placed on the desk of the new neophyte king. Plan A. What's plan A and what are its advantages? Plan A.
Surprise attack.
Surprise attack. When?
In the middle of the night.
Now, Halayla, right now. Because all the momentum is with you. You have arrived in Yerushalayim. The king has abandoned Yerushalayim. He just left. He's got an entourage of people with him. He's got a small band of warriors with him, of an army. I will take 12,000 men. I will choose 12,000 people. I will take a small army. We'll attack in the middle of the night. We will find him in a surprise attack. He's not expecting us. He's tired. He's weak. And in one fell swoop, we will end this rebellion before it starts. We will end David's reign. You will be the king. Good plan, not good plan. What's Hushai's alternative? Hushai's alternative, full frontal assault. Take the entire army of Israel. Go and get them. Full call up from Dan to Beersheba. Every one of them. And march on David's army. And we'll meet you there. And we'll all be one army. And we will attack. Because David is a warrior. David is ruthless. David is men are bitter. They're weak. They're strong. They are Gibor Echayel. That's the story. Two plans. Mm-hmm. Who's leading strategically, tactically and strategically? Which of the two is reading the strategic map correctly? Anybody want to venture an opinion?
I think Hushia. Only because he knows David's fighting prowess. And it also would probably, to organize that many men so quickly, they would have a little bit of thought preparation as well. It's not as rushed.
Okay. Fair option. Anybody else?
Then again, all that many people will alert David too, you know.
Right. You for sure lose the momentum in this element of
surprise. Yeah.
It's going to take months, if not weeks, if not months, to pull together the army of Israel.
He'll lose the advantage of surprise.
Okay. Anybody else?
It seems that the element of surprise is quite important. And it seems that Avshalom does not know that David is tired, and he does not know that David is actually going to sleep. The idea that David is up and his army is up and waiting, we know that is wrong, but Avshalom does not know it. So Hushai is very smart to have said what he said if he's working on David's behalf.
So I'm not going to get the intentions of Hushai and his agenda, we'll get to in a second. But objectively, here's Avshalom hearing two plans on the table. Which of them makes more sense? And I would have to agree, I think, in this case with Sion. I think that had Achitophel's plan been put into action, small fighting force, element of surprise, catch David at this moment. His assessment of David is very interesting. His assessment of David is, he knows David is a warrior, but his assessment of David at this moment is that he is yageya urefe yadayim, weary and weak, candid, meaning he is few in number, and he is tired from the, not just from the run from the capital. He's not just tired from the exile from the capital. He's tired in his life. He's tired of war. The whole story of Bathsheba started because he was tired of war. He's tired from the whole experience in the aftermath of Bathsheba, and the death and the antagonism and the challenge to his kingdom. He's given up. Achitophel read the story. Read David's exile from the palace as a way of saying David has given up. And in many ways, he's right. David did give up. He was not going to fight Avshalom. So he left Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim was David's city. David conquered Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is impenetrable if you look at it from the biblical perspective. And he gave it all up. Achitophel's reading of the map is David is tired physically and he's tired emotionally. And this is the moment to strike. Not only that, if I go back to Perek Tzion, the last reference we have to David in this regard is, and I'll come back to look at Perek Tzion, Pasuk Yudalid, is Vayevo Amelech V'chol Ha'am Asher Ito Ayefim. The text tells me that David is tired and all the people with him. And so Achitophel's reading of the map is a spot on. Not only that, you take a very select group of people. Notice the term here, Ivchira na 12,000 ish. I will choose 12,000 people. 12,000 well-trained fighters who are chosen, nivchar, meaning they are the choicest, is very different from a general call-up of the entire army from Dan to Beersheba. You're talking about people who barely serve with each other. Right? This is, you're talking about a small force, call them, you know, frontline Marines or special forces, whatever you want to use the analogy of. Achitofel is a general. And he says, I will take a small force of 12,000 people. With that small force, I can take out David's men. How many men does David have with him? 600 people from Itai Giti with their families. 400 or 600 men of David's fighting force with the family. This is the perfect opportunity. And strike now. Halayla. Don't wait. On top of that, I'll add another element to his plan. And that's the number. This number is not an accident. 12,000 soldiers is not an arbitrary number. It's a number that we've seen as a fighting force in a number of critical moments in biblical history. For example, let's look at Bamidbar Lamed Aleph. Do you remember the story of Midian? The daughters of Midian who seduced the men of Shevet Shimon. There was the whole story of Pinchas and Cosby Batsur and all of that. So when it came time to, and the seduction, both sexually, and then you had the idolatry, and there was a plague, and many people died. And when that was done, God said to Moshe, Nekom nikmat bnei Yisrael me'et ha-Midianim, go and avenge Israel from the Midianites. And then that'll be your last task. Go and bring an army together for this battle. How many people were there in this battle? Elef lamate, elef lamate, lechol matot Yisrael tishlochut tzava. 1,000 per tribe. V'imasru me'alfei Yisrael, elef lamate, shneim asar elef chalutzei tzava. 12,000. 12,000 because you don't want to send the entire army. The entire army is a giveaway. You lose the element of surprise. You lose the tactical advantage. And 12,000 because they represent the unity of Israel. The notion, in biblical terms, the notion of if you wanted to fight a battle and you wanted to represent the totality of the unity of the people of Israel in this campaign, you needed a representative body of every tribe. And that's what you had, 1,000 from each tribe.
Rabbi, would you expect that Judah would fight against David?
Well, ask that question again.
Would you expect that Judah, the tribe that David came from, would fight against him?
So I'll come back to that question in a second, because I don't know necessarily. First of all, Avshalom is also from Judah. So the tribe here is less the issue, at least from Avshalom's perspective, because the battle is within the family, right? You have David and Avshalom. They're both from the tribe of Judah. And David's position right now in the aftermath of Batsheva is much weaker than he was back when. So that may not be such an issue, but also I think it's not so much the question of the tribes. And here in the case of Bamidbar, the attack on Midian, they wanted representation from all the tribes. What I think he's talking about, Achitofel, is more the symbolism of the number, 12,000. 12,000 elefish. He doesn't say from each tribe, but the symbolism of 12,000 is very powerful. You see it again, for example, in Shoftim Perichov Aleph. Shoftim Perichov Aleph is the story of Pelegish Begibah, which I'm not going to rehash because for all kinds of reasons it's not. We're not going to read you the story, but there's one sub part of the story. If you're not familiar with it, that's okay. If you are familiar with it, there's a sub part of the story, which is that they're fighting against Binyamin. It's a civil war against the tribe of Binyamin. And in that civil war against the tribe of Benjamin, they took an oath not to allow their children to marry, their sons to marry the daughters of Benjamin. And then they, after they decimated Benjamin, they had a problem. What do they do with the oath? And so they looked at the question of who took place in this battle, who was part of this battle. And they found that there was an entire tribe or region called Yavesh Gilad that had not participated in this campaign. And so they come and they say, "Mi echad mishiftei Yisrael shelo ala l'shem ha-mitzpah, who amongst all the tribes of Israel did not participate in the campaign against Binyamin. V'ini lo ish lo ba ish ha-machanem Yavesh Gilad. Nobody came from the camp of Yavesh Gilad." So they took a census and they realized that Yavesh Gilad was missing. You have to understand, this battle against Binyamin, which was a civil war, starts by the phrase, "Meitzu kol bnei Yisrael v'tikra la'eda ki ish echad l'midan v'yad v'sheva v'eretz ha-gilad l'Hashem b'mitzvah." All the children of Israel against Binyamin, all the people from Dan to Beersheva, ki ish echad, united in their opposition of Binyamin. And so when they realized at that moment that Yavesh Gilad did not heed the call, they sent an army to destroy Yavesh Gilad. Who did they send? 12,000. Now, it doesn't say 12,000 meaning from every tribe, but they couldn't have every tribe because Binyamin was, right? Yavesh Gilad sided with Binyamin. But the number is symbolic. So the number represents this number of the unity of Israel. Even if it wasn't actually all the tribes, but it was the number from that days of Midian that represented the totality of the tribes of Israel. And there are other places also that talk about the number 12 as representing the tribes of Israel. Moshe, at the foot of the mountain at Mount Sinai, builds 12 altars, L'shneimasar shivtei Yisrael, corresponding to the 12 tribes of Israel. Yoshua took 12 stones out of the Yarden to make a monument out of them. Those 12 stones are L'mispar shivtei Yisrael, because of the number of the tribes of Israel. And not an uncommon phenomenon. So 12 is a symbolic number that represents the unity of Israel, and 12,000 is a good force for fighting in this kind of warfare. It says Achitophel, with 12,000 men, I can approach David. I have the unity of Israel behind me, and we will take out David and bring you back the men and end this before it gets any worse. The momentum is with them. So from every perspective, this was a genius plan. And had Achitophel executed this plan, it would have worked. I'm convinced it would have worked. He read David correctly. Uyagea, he's tired. He's weak. He's weak-handed. Ufeyadayim. He is not going to expect this. Halayla, I will attack him tonight. Okay. David liked the plan. Absalom liked the plan. And so do the elders. Why does he turn to Hushai and ask for an alternative? Forget the question of what Hushai's agenda is. Hushai has his moment. This is the moment that Hushai's been waiting for, to disrupt this plan with a plan he knows will fail. And a plan that gives him the time to inform David of what's coming. Because his plan, which is a total frontal assault of the entire army of Israel, is going to take weeks to organize. So he is going to, and he has all the time in the world, to go and tell David what's happening, which is exactly what he does. So the question is, why does Avshalom not just say, okay, this is it, this is perfect, I got it, we'll just do it? Why does he even counsel? Why does he even turn to Hushai to ask his advice? That's question number one. Number two, let's go back to the pasuk I didn't read. Pasuk Yudalad. After Hushai's description of his plan, Vayomer Avshalom v'chol ish Yisrael, Avshalom and all the men of Israel said, Tova atzat Hushai ha'arkim yatzat Achitofel. Oh, Hushai's plan sounds better. We're going to take Hushai's plan. We're going to take Hushai's counsel over Achitofel. And you can see Achitofel's jaw drop. Hushai is not a warrior. He's a friend. He's an accountant. He's a neighbor. I don't know who he is. I'm a general. I'm a Achitofel. And you're going to take Hushai's plan over mine? So the text tells me why. But I'm looking more for what's going on in Avshalom's mind. The text tells me that this was because Vashem tziva lahafer et atzat Achitofel hatova levavor avi Hashem al Avshalom antara'a. The text tells me, objectively, that Achitofel's plan was better. Atzat Achitofel hatova. Achitofel's plan was better. And yet, Avshalom chose Hushai's because God wanted it so. Like the Pasuk in Mishlei, Lev Melech B'Yad Hashem. God manipulates history by manipulating the hearts of kings. Hashem tziva lafer et atzat Achitofel. But that doesn't answer my question why Avshalom turned to Hushai in the first place. What was wrong with this? It was a perfect plan. And Hushai liked it. And Avshalom liked it. Avshalom enjoyed, he said that was the perfect plan. And the entire cabinet agreed to it. So why did he go beyond? Something in this plan of Achitofel says to Avshalom, put the brakes on. Not so fast. Question is what? So I will suggest the following. We're out of time. Only have a couple of minutes left. So I'm going to kind of jump to what I think is the core of the issue. And I'm going to read these three psukim again. Okay, so these three psukim, Pasuk Aleph through Gimel, which is Achitofel's plan. Can you all see it if I highlight it? Is that clear still or less so? Less so. Okay, I'll unhighlight. Three psukim. I want to understand these three psukim. What is Avshalom hearing? And I'm going to reread them with a simple question. As I read it, pay attention to the verbs. Okay, there are seven verbs used to describe the plan itself. You could outline it. Okay? Pay attention to those verbs, and you'll see, I think, what Avshalom hears. Vayomer Achitofel al Avshalom. Evcharana 12,000 ish. I will now choose 12,000 men. Small fighting force. Vakuma ve'irdefa achre David alayla. I will arise and pursue David tonight. Vavolav, I'll come upon him. V'yagea, he's tired, v'yadayim, and he's weak. V'acharadeti oto, I will frighten him. V'naskol ha'am mashirito, the people will run. V'keti et ha'melech levado, and I will smite the king by himself. V'ashiva kol ha'am elecha, I will bring all the people back to you. Kishuv ha'kol, ish asher ta mevakesh, everyone will return except for the one who you seek. Kol ha'am yeshalom, and everybody will be in peace. What is Avshalom hearing that he's not happy with? Perfect plan. What did Avshalom hear that he's not happy with?
It's a lot about Achitofel's actions.
All about
Achitofel. He'll get a lot of credit. Person.
It's all about Achitofel. Every one of those verbs is first person singular. I will chase after David. I will choose the army. I will catch him. I will take him out. I will frighten the people. There are seven verbs. Evchara, akuma, erdefa, avo, hacharadeti oto, hiketi et amelech, ashiva kol amelecha. Every one of them. Achitofel is at the center of the story. And Avshalom likes the plan. I'm not sure he likes Achitofel. There's an ego here that was not to be expected. And Avshalom's not so comfortable with that ego. And I add one more piece to the puzzle. Who is Avshalom's arch enemy at this point? Who is he fighting against? David, right? How does Achitophel describe David? And here Achitophel makes a dangerous slip of the tongue. He describes
weak
him
twice. And weary.
Correct. Well, how does he call him?
Weary and weak-handed.
That's an adjective. How does he refer to him?
First one there is David.
David.
The second one is HaMelech.
Correct. You want to plan a plan for the newly appointed king of Israel who's just sat on the throne, and you call David by his name and call him HaMelech? I mean, it's true. He is the king. But Hushai walked into the palace, and the first thing he said is Yechi HaMelech, referring to Avshalom. Achitophel says, give me a fighting force, I will go take out King David. King David? How does Hushai refer to him? Well, first of all, the first thing Hushai says is, look at the respect Hushai shows Achitophel. He doesn't say, Achitophel, he's a rebel. Achitophel, he's an egotistical maniac. He's a warrior who wants it all for himself. No, he's very polite. Achitophel's counsel. Achitophel's counsel, this time, not so good. Why not? Not last time he was perfect, right? Olalagag, that was great. This one, not so fast. Why? Look at how he describes David to Avshalom. Vayom Hushai. Your father's men, you're the warriors, they're embittered, they're like a bear robbed of his cubs in the field. Your father is a man of war, he's not going to lodge with the people, he's going to hide in places where it's not going to be so simple to find him, to find them. Ki gibor avicha. All of Israel knows that your father is a warrior. In all of Hushai's speech, he never refers to David by name, and he never refers to David by a title. He refers to David in every instance by his relation to Avshalom. He is Avicha. Something which Achitophel hasn't processed. He knows it, but he doesn't. Achitophel's a general, so he calls it like it is. Hushai picks that up right away. And then he plays on what everybody knows about David. David's reputation is well known. David's reputation as a warrior. So, of course, Hushai knows that David is tired and David is weak and David is out in the field, etc. But play on the reputation of David. Ki giborim eimah, they are warriors. Everybody knows that they're warriors. Everybody knows that David is a warrior. And so Hushai picks up on all of the weaknesses of Avshalom's, of Achitophel's presentation. And you're in a position where Avshalom can be swayed to Hushai's plan and not to Achitophel. All right, we're going to stop here. There's more to unpack a little bit, and then we will, Bezrat Hashem, move on to the next piece of the story. But I just wanted to, I think for now, this will is a good place to pause. And we have a bit of 5 minutes over, but if anybody has any questions, happy to take questions, and then we'll go from there. No? Then thank you for joining us. And I'm happy to stay on if anybody wants to just schmooze and say hello, because this particular period of time, I think we all need to schmooze and say hello. So I'm going to just stop the recording and call.